Inner Voice, a heartfelt chat with Dr. Fujian.
Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain, and I have Sean in studio. This is a show about what matters most in our life, our mind, thoughts, feelings, actions, relationships, and our fulfillment in this beautiful journey of life. I will share with you part one of a great conversation that I had with Dr. David Burns, adjunct professor emeritus in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Stanford University School of Medicine and the author of the best-selling books, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy, and Feeling Good Handbook. Then I will be speaking with Dr. Babak Kotep. He's a physician scientist and a neuroscientist and the founding chairman of the board of the directors and the CEO of the Society for Brain Mapping and Therapeutics. We will be talking about how to protect and care for yourself in the coronavirus epidemic times. I also have a good news for you. Get ready for a Mother's Day concert you won't forget. On Sunday, May 10th at 11 a.m., join the IAW Foundation Music of Hope virtual concert featuring talented musicians from around the world getting together to celebrate the most important women in our lives, our moms. And if you're a mom, then of course you. Just go to IAW Foundation Facebook or YouTube. So facebook.com/IAW Foundation or YouTube/IAW Foundation. And I want to share with you the tip of the week and what I have been experiencing this past week. So this week, I have been talking to many people who are getting fed up, some giving up, some antsy, many anxious, and some really depressed. I heard the news about Dr. Lorna Brin, who's a physician in the ER who committed suicide, and my heart fell. I've been working with doctors and nurses who are tired and suffering. The daily trauma that they have to endure is horrendous. Watching with powerlessness how their patients are dying is traumatizing. Many of them have thought about giving up, quitting, hiding, or dying, and most are hanging in there and finding a ray of hope and meaning to move forward daily to save all those lives that they can. I'm so sad that Dr. Brin did not. My heart goes out to her and her family. May her beautiful soul among all that have left us rest in peace. I've also been talking to people who financially have been devastated and have no idea what is in front of them, watching families come together and shifting priorities, finding resources, neighbors and friends helping with food and grocery are heartwarming. Seeing the power of generosity and love coming together and lifting each one of us up. There's a common obstacle, and yet it's affecting each one of us so differently, depending on which area of our life is challenged. Feelings of anxiety, uncertainty, and grief is a common experience. Connecting virtually has been interesting, but not necessarily fulfilling. So people are trying to sneak out to parks, beaches, and even family members' backyards to have some 6 feet close encounters with each other. Some get furious with others who get close or not wearing a mask. Some still don't care and will rebel against anything or anyone who will take their freedom away. All in all, we're still hanging in there and going with the flow. The uplifting news and gratitude for all the new positive circumstances are also apparent in people's sharing. Staying home, taking care of yourself, spending time with your family, creating new projects, getting creative, learning new hobbies, getting fit, reading books, and much more have been all the fascinating byproducts of these times. So don't give up. There's so much more waiting for you, and there's so many people that you can support, move, and inspire. You matter, so hang in there. And don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with a great show for you.
Are you afraid? Are you getting panic attacks? Are you getting bored and can't stand it anymore at your home? Are you finding yourself in a bind with a relationship at home? Are you wondering what all of the fuss is? And are you determined to guard yourself against all others? Or worried about how am I going to pay my rent or mortgage? In respect to the coronavirus stress, I'm offering a sliding scale online psychotherapy for anyone in California and life coaching to anyone in the world who's suffering financially. Please connect with me at foujan.com, foujan.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Inner Voice Show. I'm Dr. Foujan Zain, and I'm so excited to be with Dr. David Burns. He has been a guest on my show. He's been a great teacher to me, and it's an honor to always have him on my show, and I always learn from him. Dr. David Burns is an adjunct professor emeritus in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Stanford University School of Medicine and the author of the best-selling books, Feeling Good, The New Mood Therapy, and The Feeling Good Handbook. And I know that all of you are waiting for the next one, which is going to be Feeling Great, which will be coming back.
It'll come out in September, and my publisher just told me it's already available for pre-sale on Amazon. I just got that information today.
Beautiful. Well, welcome to the show, Dr. Burns. And one of the things that has been happening recently is the doctors and nurses are pretty much on the front line. So they are being faced with a lot of trauma, in a sense, because they're in a place that they have to be responsible for others. One of the experiences I had with one of the physicians who said, for the first time in my life, I've had to be in a position where I've had to make a choice about saving someone who's about 70 or saving someone who's about 30 or 40 or saving me. And not even going to the hospital. And every day I'm faced with this type of situation. And then a lot of my colleagues are passing away and they're getting sick. So we're facing the families. We usually, we had this experience when we worked with war veterans. And now we're also having this experience with physicians and nurses and hospital workers. What would be some of your suggestions to them or their family? I know you've been working with some of them also.
I don't ever have suggestions for anyone on anything, but I could give you an example of someone I worked with just this week, whose husband is an emergency room and intensive care unit doctor in New York, and she's been under incredible stress and pressure. It's not only the medical people at the front lines, and you would say it's like a war situation. I had actually used this metaphor when working with her because I was thinking about like the Civil War. Her husband's off fighting this war, and he's recently intubated two of his close colleagues, and three of his close colleagues are now in the intensive care unit, intubated on respirators. And he's working like 16 hours a day under constant danger of catching this coronavirus himself. And his wife, Taylor, who was the one I treated, she's a psychologist in New York and a lovely person, cries every night for 30 minutes to an hour sobbing because she's separated from her husband and it's like he's off at war and she never knows each day if he's going to survive. And I'd love to walk you through that beautiful session and show you some of the techniques that we use to be helpful to her. And one of the underlying themes is one that people will scoff at, particularly in a time like this. You see, part of my work is based on cognitive therapy that goes back to Epictetus 2,000 years ago, who said that people are not disturbed by things, but by the views we take of them. And the idea is that all of your feelings, 100% of your feelings, positive or negative, are created by your thoughts in the here and now. And that means that the coronavirus cannot upset you. The pandemic cannot have any emotional impact on you one way or the other, only your thoughts about it. And people think that's preposterous. And then another fantastic part of the cognitive model is that when you're depressed and anxious and angry and hopeless and overwhelmed, the thoughts that are affecting you won't be valid thoughts. They'll be distorted thoughts. And while that might sound critical or negative, it's actually positive, because the implication is then you can change the way you feel by changing the way you think and getting rid of these distorted perceptions. But can this really be true in a coronavirus, that your husband's on the front line and still you're only upset by thoughts and distorted thoughts? Well, we can check it out and find that if that's true, and see if it can be helpful to someone who's suffering as severely as Taylor.
Definitely. I would love to hear your model and how you go by the model team into looking at these matters. And I'm positive that our viewers will take the example that you're saying, that you have worked with this person, and they will kind of adapt it to what they're going through themselves and utilize the wisdom that you're bringing to it.
Well, hopefully, I think it always helps to see someone who's real, who's suffering, and see what tools were helpful to them to break out of that horrible black hole of depression and anxiety and anger. You want me to tell you what she was thinking and feeling?
Please.
Yeah. I always use a form called the Daily Mood Log in my work. And I ask a person to, at the top, it's upsetting event, to describe one specific moment you were upset, because all I can ever help anyone with is for 1, 2 to 4 or 5 second moment of their life. And that doesn't sound like much, but all of your problems will be encapsulated in any one brief moment when you're upset. So once we understand how you were feeling then, we'll understand all of your problems. And once I show you how to change at that moment, you'll understand how to change all of your problems generally. So her moment was last night, worrying about Greg, her husband, and crying for 30, 44 to 45 minutes before falling asleep. And then I say, now let's circle all of your negative feelings you were having at that moment and tell me how strong each one was on a scale from 0 to 100. And she circled the depression, sad, down, and depressed cluster 100%, the most upset a human being can be. And if you went into the Stanford Hospital where people are getting electroconvulsive therapy, most of them wouldn't even have depression levels as high as 100%. So, and that's important, because Taylor looks like you. She doesn't look ethnically like you, but she's perky and positive, and she treats her patients, and she's positive and helpful to people. You'd never know that she's feeling this way inside if you weren't actually measuring these feelings. And her anxiety, worry, panic, frightened cluster she circled, that's 100%. Again, the most intense fear a human being can have. And then she's feeling bad, 50%. She's feeling lonely, alone, abandoned, 90%. She's feeling hopeless and discouraged, 90%. Frustrated and stuck, 100. And then finally, angry, mad, resentful, all of that cluster, 100, as angry as a human being can be. Now, what is causing those feelings? It's her thoughts, and that you who are listening, your thoughts create all of your feelings as well. Even at this moment, you may be thinking, oh, Byrne sounds like a fraud. So you're probably feeling angry, or you may be thinking, oh, Byrne might be onto something. This could be great. Then you're feeling happy. So your thoughts right now are creating all of your feelings. So she wrote down thought number one, I shouldn't have to do this alone. See, she's home taking care of 3 kids. He's living 6 blocks away, so he doesn't come home and, you know, give the virus to his family in case he catches it. She's managing 3 little children, treating her patients at the same time, and she's feeling alone. And I can't handle parenting alone, she's telling herself. And that's 70%. And I shouldn't burden Greg with my feelings. And she believes that 70%. A lot of you may feel that way. I've got to hide my feelings. People are hiding feelings for a variety of reasons all the time. And she's also telling herself, I shouldn't share my feelings with Greg. She believes that 50%. And she says, I should be strong and tough. And she believes that 80%. And a lot of women give themselves that message too. You know, in this women's liberation to me is a fantastic thing. I say more power to women all over the world. Let's get more women into the political office and let's let women take over for a while. But at the same time, it puts all this pressure on women. You've got to be a wife 100%. You've got to be a mother 100%. And you've got to be have your career 100%, and it's kind of hard to be so strong and tough all the time. By the way, remind me to tell you the results of my Corona survey, which were fascinating. But let's stick with Taylor. I'll let my patients down if I don't have enough time for them. That's 50%. I'm going to lose Greg. He's going to die. She believes that varies between 50 and 100%. I shouldn't have to do this, 100%. That's the anger thought. And I should be able to work and support my family while Greg stays at home safely. She's saying, why can't he just come home and not have to go to the emergency room and all work? I can earn enough money and, you know, he shouldn't have to be out there on the front lines. And so that's just our introduction to Taylor. I can tell you she's a beautiful person. She has a PsyD degree. She was for 2 years in California while her husband was training at Stanford in intensive care type work. And she was in my Tuesday group for 2 years. And then they moved back home to New York. And then she opened the New York Center for the Feeling Good Institute in New York City based on my work. She works with children primarily. And she's just a beautiful person, a close friend, and just broke my heart to hear that she was struggling in this way and under these overwhelming circumstances. And then the question is, what can we offer someone like Taylor? Well, empathy is good. Is that all we can offer? Could we possibly offer more than that? Now, Fu, you will say something awesome and important. I'll shut up and listen.
No. I heard until you said that empathy obviously is the first thing and one of the most important thing to be able to give someone because the circumstances are the circumstances. So it's more of understanding and validating that they're not crazy. This is happening and this is happening to them. And then with what's happening, then you go into shifting and looking at their belief system and with your model. Yeah. Your model by itself has a lot of compassion and empathy.
Yeah.
Like embedded in it.
Yeah. And at the beginning of the session, she was tearing up and she says 75% of the time she's okay and treating her patients and working with her kids, her three kids, keep her busy. And I think the oldest is about 4. So they require a lot of attention. And then 25% of the time, she's just in terror, terrified and sad. And she started sobbing at that point Rhonda, the host of my podcast, and I were the ones who were treating her. And then she says at night, she fears he'll die. You know, three of his colleagues are already in intensive care. She's afraid her kids will grow up without a father. She's supporting a lot of people. Talked about, you know, Greg having to move out. He's terrified too. In fact, he's been kind of a solid rock emotionally. And then he called her the other night and said he thought he was dying. He couldn't breathe and thought he was maybe having a panic attack. So he's been terrified as well. And, you know, will we ever be able to have a family again? And so we we just, you know, listened and supported, didn't try to help her, just want at the first part of the session, just want to be with her and know that we're listening, and then we get it. And then perhaps in the next segment, we can talk about then where do you go from there once you know how someone's feeling and you're supporting them, what's next?
So one of the first things that I'm hearing from you in this episode is that when you are feeling overwhelmed with what's happening to you, one of the first things that you can also do for yourself is to empathize with yourself and empathize with the part of you that is going through sorrow. I know that almost every morning when I wake up and, you know, listen to the news, I'm just filled with a lot of sadness and grief with what I'm hearing. And that just kind of like sits with me until I go and exercise and try to kind of get this, you know, washed off and then be able to pull myself up so that I can be there for my clients and, you know, do these interviews and everything else. But it's really to also take care of that part of ourselves and be empathetic or compassionate toward ourselves when all of these feelings arise, and not think that I have to push it aside or run away from it or make it wrong. So this is what, you know, obviously masters in therapy do first for you. They will create empathy and compassion for you. And this is something that you can also do for yourself as a first step.
As well as for others in the family, other people. You don't have to be some kind of a trained therapist to listen and provide compassion. Sometimes it's a big mistake to try to help another person who's upset, as opposed to just listening and being with them and letting them cry and letting them know you understand how you feel and that you care about them. That alone can be huge for most people.
Absolutely. So thank you, Dr. Burns, for sharing your wisdom with us. For all of you, thank you for being with us. And stay tuned. We're going to have more of these conversations with Dr. David Burns. Thank you.
Join the conversation every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific for Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Dr. Fujian is a radio and TV host, international speaker, psychotherapist, life coach, and the author of Life Reset, The Awareness Path to Create the Life You Want. She brings you the latest research and interviews with experts in the field of cognitive sciences. Anyone who loves to grow and create growth for humanity gets a voice on this call-in show. Inner Voice Heartfelt Chat with Dr. Fujian. Monday afternoons at 3 p.m. Pacific on Smart Talk KMET 1490 AM and on KMET1490AM.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Dr. Fujian Zain again, and welcome to the Inner Voice Show. I am excited to have Dr. Baba Kotte, who is a physician scientist and a neuroscientist with more than 20 years of research experience. His research has been focused on introduction of advanced diagnostics and therapeutics into clinical neuroscience in order to rapidly identify and introduce game-changing technologies to treat neurological disorders such as brain cancer, Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, and other brain and spinal disorders. Dr. Kotev is the founding chairman of the board of directors and CEO of Society of Brain Mapping and Therapeutics, and he's the president and scientific director of the Brain Mapping Foundation and director of National Center for Nanobioelectronics. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Dr. Fujian, and it's a great honor to be with you and your wonderful viewers.
Dr. Kotev, I know that at this point, because of the coronavirus, you have been putting all of your effort and your group and your crew and everyone into what needs to be known, what needs to be done. And you have an ample amount of information that we need from you for everyone who's listening and viewing us. So please let us know, because what I hear a lot of times from physicians and scientists, it's at one point in kind of an wow conversation about it, where we have no idea what it is. What is it doing to people? It's having adverse effect. The effects are not similar in, you know, the elderly versus the youth versus the children, and, you know, in different places. And then we also get, you know, the other side, which is, oh, it's just another kind of flu. They're just making the big deal out of this. And we don't understand why it's going on so far. And so you're getting really two polar views from people. We really need to be clear about this. So please clarify some from a scientific view for us.
Sure. Well, thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to educate your viewers. First of all, Society for Brain Mapping and Therapeutics is a multi-specialty association of scientists, neurologists, neurosurgeons, radiologists, and engineers of multiple different backgrounds, and psychiatrists, psychologists like yourself. So when the coronavirus, COVID-19, basically came to the U.S., they quickly started a subcommittee for COVID-19 and mobilized our partnership and collaboration with our international groups in five different continents, and also with basically government organizations like national labs and the Department of Defense and so on. So to answer your question in respect to the virus, coronaviruses have been around for many, many years and pretty known to the world of medicine and science, but also there's a difference between flu virus here and the COVID-19. One of the great examples is that in flu, you have one of the lungs involved. In this COVID-19, both lungs are involved. But also in flu, you don't have the virus invading other organs. So we now see this virus gets into the endothelial cells and basically get into kidneys and livers and of patients and basically create a organ failure. And now we are seeing more and more under 50-year-old patients coming with a stroke. That was reported by our colleagues from New York. And encephalitis and meningitis are also reported. So you don't see this in flu.
There's also this reports that I read which affects the brain. And since in some level, with some patients, it affects the brain in a way that young people are getting strokes, and some other people who are older are getting inflammation in the brain, and they're saying that it is due to the coronavirus. Is that accurate?
That's correct. As I mentioned earlier, you know, we are now seeing stroke amongst the patients who are under age 50, and that was reported by Dr. Ambush Tiwari, one of our board members. And also encephalitis and meningitis. But also we are obviously seeing some post-traumatic stress disorders among general population who are isolated, and among the patients who are coming out of ICU. The same patient that goes into the ICU is not the same person that is coming out because of that traumatic experience. So I think it's very important what you're doing here in your show, raising awareness about the science behind the new therapeutics and diagnostics for the virus, differentiating flu and COVID-19, but also raising awareness about mental disorders and neurological disorders associated with the COVID-19.
We're finding a lot of, obviously, anxiety, generalized anxiety disorders, heightened anxiety attacks and panic attacks. We're watching a lot of depression, even suicide. We had one of the emergency doctors who committed suicide earlier last week. We're watching a lot of the anxiety that is due to
even kind of an existential anxiety also about what to do, who am I, and the identity that I might have had as someone who had this type of a career and I no longer have it. What's going to happen to me when I go back to the world? And one of the interesting ones that I found this past week as I spoke with many of friends, colleagues, and clients is that even though everybody's cooped up and having adverse effect about being cooped up, but the minute that this conversation is about, okay, governors are saying that you can slowly but surely open up your practices or open up your businesses and move forward, now there's this fear of what's going to happen. Who do I know that I can bring and not bring? How do I put myself out there? Because the virus is almost like this unknown enemy that we have no idea where it is. You know, is it someone? Is it something? And is it on any surface? So this kind of paranoia, which is appropriate, but you know, a little bit more of a paranoia concept is among all of us at this point, which makes you know us in a hyper alert all the time, insomnia, people a lack of sleep, and then you know domestic violence, getting violent and agitated with people who are at home, abuse. It's just ongoing, and then there's no relief at sight because we don't know about the vaccines. We don't know about, you know, all of therapeutic concepts that are out there. We don't know about all the tests. What is it that you see for our future with all the knowledge and the science that you're getting?
I think knowledge is power. You have to educate yourself about the virus, about how it spreads, about lifetime of virus. This virus, it doesn't live on surfaces for more than several hours. So, and even if you, identify viral particles, they're not necessarily going to be causing disease. So I think obviously basic cleaning is going to be very helpful. And 97% of people who get this virus, they actually recover. So I think the reason we are staying at home is to make sure that the hospitals have the capacity to deal with the surges. So that seemed to be in place right now, and the governors are start opening the businesses. And I think we have to really go back and think about what do we have. Right now, if you're healthy, you're a billionaire, okay? Let's put it that way. Health is something that you cannot buy. The health is not something that you can replace with anything. So if you're healthy, you are basically in good hands. And by healthy, I mean physical and mental. So, and also we know this virus is really not a respiratory disease. It is an immunological disease. This virus activates the immune system in the body, which actually attacks the virus, but the immune system reacts so magnificently and powerfully, it actually starts damaging the organs. So I think knowing that, we have to think about, okay, what do we do and what we don't do? We do yoga and basically positive thinking, it will help. And we have to be in control of our body and mind. And once you are actually calm down, your immune system performs its best. So exercise and basically meditate, read, go away from the negative thoughts, bring positive thoughts, and always remember who built your business. You did it. Okay. Okay. Well, you may lose money or you may lose it, but you will bring it back. So once you think that way, you basically much more prepared to handle it, but much more self-confident to meet this new challenge head on.
if we are going back to work, if we're going back to semi-normal life, what is it that we can do to take care of ourselves? For example, I was I share an office in Beverly Hills where the office space itself, the lobby, the hallways, you know, there were multiple therapists who work. And so we have different clients who are coming at the same time. And part of our conversation was, well, how are we going to keep our clients safe where there's a one lobby? They're not, you know, the same 6 feet, even in the hallways. So part of these guidelines, you know, we can't restructure all buildings in that way. So a lot of these conversations are showing up for us where how do we recreate rituals or way of being and way of operating, which keeps us safe within, you know, within a distance, appropriate distance. Any type of protocols that your group and your scientists coming up with, how do we do this as we go forward? Because obviously we're not going to be at home, you know, for the rest of the year.
Correct. Well, that's a good question. You know, I think prioritizing patients is one thing that you do in clinics. So you don't have to bring every single patient to the clinic. So some of the patients can be actually visited over basically telemedicine, but some must come in. And then how do you structure those visits? Obviously, you know, with some delays, and maybe your clinics could stay a little bit longer. So, I mean, that's just in relationship to your clinic, but, you know, I think it is possible to do our business, but it has to be just much more organized and much more structured. Now, you know, in some cases, you know, the managers and the owners can get together and kind of put their thoughts together. These are very smart people who started these small businesses. So the protocols could be also developed internally, and you know, we can use American ingenuity, come up with new things that could actually move up to the governor and say, hey, this is the protocol we came up with. What do you think of that?
What are some of the new testing that you and your scientists have found that will be available? Some tests, they say, for example, you know, if you do it today, you'll get the results 5 days from now. Some, you know, for some businesses are saying until we get the test that we could have some result within the 15 minutes, we can't really have our patients or customers come in and go freely. Like, we can't really go back into some sort of a normalcy until we have those tests available for us. Any news on any kind of those tests being around as far as you know?
Well, you know, FDA is looking at about 300 different tests, and many of them are already approved. So I think those tests that are approved have high level of accuracy. They're not 100%, but, you know, almost no test is 100%. But, you know, high level of accuracy that could be used. But, you know, our group is also looking into using nanoparticles for sensors to basically, you can use a very small sample of saliva, literally by leaking this strip of kind of test, can tell you after, you know, 5-10 minutes if you have COVID or not. And that's been in the R&D level that I think in the future, you're going to have infrared cameras that can detect temperature of customers at the door, and some sort of testing that is, you know, accurate enough for you to let somebody in or not. So, and then there are vaccines coming up. There are several drugs, as you have seen. Remdesivir is one of them, which is a RNA-dependent RNA polymerase inhibitor. And there is another drug that is called Avigan, which is basically in the same category of RNA-dependent RNA polymerase inhibitor, which basically does not allow the virus replicate. And, hydroxychloroquine also was mentioned, but, you know, hydroxychloroquine actually only is good if you are taking it at the onset of the basically infection, because it blocks the endocytosis of the virus. As you may know, virus gets into cell in two different ways. And I have sent you another picture you can show to your viewers. So one is through endocytosis, which hydroxychloroquine really blocks that. The other one is through a receptor called ACE2 receptor, ACE2 receptor. And once the virus comes through that ACE2 receptor, you really cannot use hydroxychloroquine. So that's why hydroxychloroquine works in some patients and it doesn't work in many patients. So there are a lot of activities going on. There are about 20, 30 different vaccine trials are being considered. So I think you will see by September or maybe even mid summer, a lot more drugs being approved and a lot more therapies and testing will be approved.
Dr. Kateb, a lot of the fear is also about people who are asymptomatic. So they don't show it, they don't feel it, but they are transmitters of the disease. So things such as getting the thermometer or getting the body temperature, would that even be effective for those people who are asymptomatic? Because I'm assuming if someone has the coronavirus and they have the symptoms and they have high temperature, they have the fever, that's how it shows. For example, even in some of the airports, not obviously in the US, but in other countries are, you know, holding the temperature and seeing if that is, but that wouldn't be helping us if someone is asymptomatic.
Correct. I think that's a good question. And I think if you look at the data that coming out of Italy, Iran, and China, and of course from New York and Louisiana, you'll see that some of the patients, they don't even show any symptoms. They don't even have a higher temperature. That tells me that their immune system really suppressed the virus and took care of it. But they are transmitting and they are basically infecting others. That is the reason the government has ordered or suggested to us, stay home, because when you reduce transmission, this viral transmission go down. So let's say if I have the virus and I have no symptoms, but I'm transmitting this, but this viral transmission from me is not gonna be forever, okay? It's gonna be for a period of time that my immune system just shut it down. So once you shut down that viral transmission, this person, in this case me, can go out and interact with others. So that's why the orders or recommendations to stay home has been effective in states like California.
So that's where wearing the mask also becomes important, because obviously we're wearing the mask, but in case we are in any format infected, that we don't give it to others. And so is there any particular advice that you have about the masks that people are wearing and what works and what doesn't, or anything works just because you're trying for your own breathing or saliva not to become part of the air?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good point. If you look at Japanese study that they look at the droplets and the saliva particulates. They look at how our regular conversation generates micro droplets and nanoparticulates. So that's really was the base for Japanese putting on masks on, and then later on in the U.S., basically authorities were pressured to, put that out and ask when people put their mask on. When you speak to somebody in their normal conversation, you produce particulates and droplets. And depends on how small they are, and depends on the fact that if you are in a closed area or there's a ventilation going on, this droplets can stay in the air for a longer period of time. Okay, so if you have a better ventilation system, which I recommend everybody have in their offices and their stores, that actually reduce the float of the particulates. So of course masks will prevent that, and it's very important that for now we follow those guidelines and wash our hands, but also masks will prevent from us touching our face and our mouth, which we do over 1,000 times.
Dr. Kartep, there's this conversation about the antibodies, and if somebody has been infected and then they felt better and they recovered, they will make some antibodies, and obviously there's some tests that also test the antibodies. But there's also this conversation that I read that you're not immune to it, that you'll never have it again, that even if you have been infected and recovered, that you might, although you might even have the antibodies in your body, but you might get infected again. What are your research about that?
Very good point. We are writing a review paper with a group of scientists in the last 2.5 months. We have gathered over 300 references. And from what we see in the medical literature is that once you get this virus, you may not get it again. That's because if your immune system has developed the antibody that connects itself to that ACE2 receptor, there is no way for virus to actually basically come into the cell. Another interesting study has come out looking at nicotine as one of the compounds that could actually attach to ACE2 receptor, blocking virus to get in. So that's in a clinical trial to provide nicotine patch to frontline workers to see if nicotine competes with the same receptor that virus competes with. So, but much more potent to that. So, they're looking into that. So, I think once the person gets it, basically they are immune to it.
Wrong time to quit smoking, huh? Maybe I should go back to smoking.
Oh, yeah. So, I think, that, again, that's a cautionary note. They're looking at the different compounds that compete for that receptor. So, nicotine is one of them. But, I think it's good time to quit smoking and be healthy, because smoking also damages your immune system and lung capacity. So that means if you get flu or God forbid COVID-19, your lungs are in the worst shape of delivering oxygen to the blood, which in case of COVID-19 is a major problem. It's called interstitial pneumonia. That basically exchange of gas between oxygen, between alveoli and the blood doesn't happen. And ventilators put in place to actually push that, but in some cases it doesn't really help.
So
beside the cytokine storm that you have heard about.
So what I'm hearing is, at this point, the best thing that our viewers and our listeners can do is to take care of themselves, so emotionally and physically they keep being healthy while they're at home, building their immune systems, such as what you shared about, you know, exercising, yoga, keeping their, positive thoughts and positive emotions, and keeping themselves active in doing things that they love and want to do. And also as they go out, and whether they create new protocols to being out there at their work, and their companies can create protocols that is appropriate to their type of situation and their type of customers, to wear the mask, as many types of masks that they can acquire in order to protect actual others from who they are, keeping themselves safe out there. If there's, until we wait for the vaccines to be out there for all of us to be vaccinated, and if they do have symptoms, to talk to their physicians, and whether they can be at home and take care of themselves, or that unfortunately, if they do need to be hospitalized, then there are some treatments that are being utilized in the hospitals with those medications that are having good effects, and people are coming out of the hospitals out of the ventilators and being, surviving and being okay. That's the bigger picture that I'm hearing. Can you add to anything that you said that I didn't?
I think the mental fitness is incredibly important. So for many of us, COVID-19 is not a problem. Just the pressure of staying at home all the time and being exposed to news all the time. So I think one of the things you shouldn't be doing too much news watching. So I think get the gist of the news, but make sure that you de-stress by looking at funny programs or do some fun thing with the family. Be more creative. Look at your business model and see how creatively you can adapt that and take an advantage of this situation and even make more money. So I think there are ways that you could be adapting, and instead of thinking, oh my God, I'm going to lose my business, I'm going to say, well, wait a minute, how can I actually use my current business, adapt it, or even change it a little bit and make more money?
Beautiful. Thank
That's
you.
That's how it should be viewed. So once you think that way, your mental pressure is basically less. You are much more in a kind of a equilibrium situation that you can actually think about, how can you handle the process.
Thank you very much for the time that you allowed us. I know you're very, very busy. We postponed the conference that you had created. It's supposed to be in Los Angeles in March, and that's going to be next year. And it seems like, we've adapted consistently with different ways of handling all that needs to be out there, and just focusing on keeping healthy, keeping safe, and moving forward. And thank you. Thank you for the time that you allowed for us.
Pleasure. Thank you very much hosting me in your show. And also thank you from your viewers and listeners to be part of this amazing program that you have put together.
Thank you. And for everyone who's with us, create an amazing life for yourself and everyone around you. Until next week, bye-bye.